to the CAAV podcast. This week, we heard Chancellor Jeremy Hunt's final budget of this Parliament, and likely the final Tory budget for a few years. Much was touted ahead of the budget, but what has it really delivered? Jeremy Moody, Secretary and Advisor to the CAAV, has been trawling through the depths of the details to see what lies behind the headline figures. So Jeremy, let's start with your initial reaction to Mr. Hunt's budget. Is it what you were expecting?
Overall, it probably is, in that it could be seen as a budget that, on a normal year, he'd perhaps rather not make. That it was something where he has an election coming up, where a March budget is conventional, and therefore a Chancellor is expected to produce announcements, and he's produced a collection of announcements, but some of them are really rather interesting in the rural sector. Overall, probably, apart from the national insurance cut for employees and the self-employed, he has done relatively little in overall terms. It's pitched as a budget for the long term, but it is from a government with an election within 12 months.
So looking at the headline figures, of which there were few that mostly was buried in the detail, but how beneficial are the changes to the agricultural and rural sectors?
There are some capital tax and other changes just to pick up. But I think the real benefit is that the government has this time answered the question it dodged back in November in the financial statement, which was the response to the consultation it issued a year ago in last March's budget regarding how we tax environmental transactions and assets, whether we extend agricultural property relief to cover farmland put into a serious environmental commitment, and whether we limit agricultural property relief on let land to land that is being let for at least 8 years. And he has answered all three questions, not in his budget speech, not really in any of the headlines in the paperwork, but he has issued the answer, and the answers to this are all helpful. And that brings not just helpful answers, but also certainty, where people have been increasingly worried about not knowing what the answer might be, and so getting more worried by it.
So some good news there, which we'll come to shortly and explore in a bit more detail. In terms of the sort of the more immediate implications for rural dwellers, income tax, national insurance, the really big ones that were in the speech, could you just explore that a little bit?
Yes. I mean, income tax, he has left all the thresholds, which have been frozen now for some years and to be frozen for some time. He's left them alone and he's left the rates alone. So on the face of it, no change. But two changes for income tax, though, within that. The first one, across the general economy, is that there has been a particularly nasty kink in the tax system for people earning around 50,000 as individuals, but who have child benefit. And the child benefit has been withdrawn at that point, and they have faced a very high marginal tax rate with the coincidence of higher 40% tax band, national insurance, and also the withdrawal of child benefit. He is looking in the longer term to resolve the problem more fundamentally, but in the shorter term, he has raised the starting point for this and extended the taper, which should assist some of those people caught in that position. And it's been a very odd one, because not only is it a very high marginal rate of income tax, but if you have one person earning 50,000 in a house, they pay very much more than if you have two people earning 49,000 in a household. And so it's trying to bring some order to that. The other change, which will be more relevant in many rural areas, is the change for the income tax treatment of furnished holiday lettings. Again, we wait to see the details of this, but it's being explained as bringing furnished holiday lettings into line for tax purposes with ordinary residential lettings. And a number of tax problems have been created for ordinary residential lettings, most obviously the withdrawal of tax relief on mortgage interest. And we don't know how that is to be done, whether it's going to be phased as it was for ordinary lettings. But that is something that's been brought in because of the concern that in many rural areas, particularly coastal and holiday and tourist areas, the attraction of letting on short lets rather than on long lets has further starved an already restricted and undersupplied housing market. Equally, of course, many people in rural and holiday and coastal areas enjoy the income from doing this, and it is a service where there may otherwise not be very much accommodation. My guess at the moment is that if this applies in the way that it applies to residential lettings, it will most sharply affect those who have bought properties to manage this way, rather than people who have got long-term farm cottages, cottages on estates, where there will not be debt attached to the cottage, and so they will probably not notice the difference of this announcement. But we wait to see. The government found in all the Liz Truss excitements of last autumn 12 months ago, that you could vary tax on income during the year rather than only doing it with each financial year. You can vary national insurance at quite short notice. And of course, that happened with the increase of the 1.25% for the social charge. It was then done at various steps in the autumn. And then in his financial statement last November, Jeremy Hunt reduced national insurance on employees' payments from 10% to 8%. He's now reduced it again from 8% to 6%. For employees, that was reduced with effect from January, and this new reduction should take effect from April. For the self-employed, it is more of a calendar year basis because of the way tax returns are made, but they will see it reduce from the 9% in the current tax year to 6% in the next one, having been announced at 8% in November and now cut to 6. So some quite significant sums of money coming out of this, but not from income tax. He's declared a long-run intention of just abolishing employees' national insurance. That, of course, is on a timescale longer than the present parliament.
Right, and there was also an increase in the VAT threshold. How beneficial will that be to rural businesses?
I think it's relatively marginal. We were always limited by European rules as to what the VAT threshold could be. We had a higher threshold than almost any other country in Europe, and it's been at 85,000 for a number of years. Obviously, if you have a lot of VAT on your inputs, you could register for VAT earlier, or of course farming businesses that are conventionally recoverers of VAT rather than paying VAT. The concern has been that there are businesses that manage their life to live just below the threshold so as not to attract VAT, so as not to charge more to retail customers. He's lifted it by 5,000 to 90,000. It feels more of a gesture than a really substantive change. If the concern is that businesses are refusing to grow because of this, then I think we might either be worried about the businesses or feel that not much change has been made.
That's fair enough. There were also tweaks to capital gains tax, stamp duty land tax, and business rates. Were these tweaks or were these substantive changes?
Well, both the capital gains tax and the SDLT one are interesting. A while ago, the standard rate of capital gains tax set at 20%, because that's about the level that maximises the amount of tax you can take. It's not so much it stops people from dealing, and it's high enough to raise some money. And that's been found to be an optimal rate. However, there was a concern about the gains on residential property, again, the government playing in the housing market. And while if you sell your own property, your primary residence, you are fully relieved from capital gains tax by principal place of residence relief. All other properties, if you sold a property you were letting out or a second property, then you would attract capital gains on that. And some years ago, the tax on that was put up to 28%, feeling it was activity in this area should be discouraged. The Treasury has now announced that 28% is now to be cut to 24%, so not fully back to 20. But the modelling the Treasury has done, and it's shown in the detailed figures, is that this will actually raise them more money because people will then be more willing to sell properties. It helps people, in perhaps in the Treasury's eyes, to sell up the buy-to-lets they no longer want to have by reducing the amount of tax charge on that. The Treasury actually thinks it's going to make more money from a lower tax rate. So it's one of those interesting cases where the tax rate had been pushed too far for the taxpayers' benefit. On SDLT, the particular challenge, and this, of course, is for England and Northern Ireland only, Scotland and Wales have their separate taxes and will make their own announcements, whatever they may be. But in England and Northern Ireland, we've had a relief from stamp duty land tax on property purchases where you have a you're buying several properties. And if they're all dealt with as one transaction, then you would move into a higher band. They've then looked at ways that we've had reliefs that have tried to ameliorate that, and the government has now decided to withdraw those reliefs. There's a particular point here. They are looking at further conversations with the agricultural sector about how this might apply, because clearly if you buy a farm, you might be buying two, three or more residences with it. And I think there's an anxiety as to how that might actually work through. But that's something where we're waiting to see what the conversations are going to be about.
Now, ahead of the budget, the CAAV drafted a 16-page consultation document detailing what you would like to have seen implemented to help the agricultural and rural sectors to thrive in the years ahead. How many of those recommendations have you seen answered in the budget?
We put in a submission really under three headings, and the first was for answers to that Treasury consultation that we'll get to shortly. And on that, I think we've been fairly fully answered. The second area was looking at the investment that we think farming needs to be able to be properly equipped, properly innovative for the future. And on that, and capital allowances, increasing the annual investment allowance, increasing structures and buildings allowance, particularly farming so dependent on its structures, whether they're slurry stores or their poultry sheds or flood embankments or whatever, and the present structure of structures and buildings allowance doesn't really help very much at all. And the third area was trying to go for something larger and more urgent on specifically important areas of investment. He has done nothing for sole traders or for partnerships on capital allowances, and really only a marginal extension of what companies can do. And that is more for assets for leasing. So I think at this point, that effort has not yielded a result. And then we went for two particular technical areas of reform. One was for rollover relief from compulsory purchase. When HS2 comes through your dairy parlour, you cannot use the receipts with tax relief to be able to rebuild the building you've lost. That's something we know the Treasury would quite like to reform. I have not so far seen that they have done so. And there are certain issues around the time limits for entrepreneurs relief for farmers, or business assets disposal relief as it now is. Both those issues are probably too technical, even particularly to get registered in the Red Book, the budget, detailed budget papers. I may see more as I get more into the detail, but at the moment I've not yet seen that those have been answered. But of course we have a finance bill to come.
We'll keep our fingers crossed on that then. There was also some good news when it comes to taxation of land going into agri-environment schemes. Can you talk me through that a little bit?
Yes. This is a very major consultation that the Treasury put out with the last budget and gave us 3 months to answer. We put in a 70-page response around the three parts of the consultation, but this, if you like, is the central area. And the proposal here was answering the doubts, the concerns, the fears of many farmers and landowners that if they were to take up major environmental commitments, they would risk dropping out of agricultural property relief, not necessarily having business property relief, both from inheritance tax, and so risking moving from a relatively relieved position straight into a 40% tax rate on their assets on death. And that's enough to make anybody fear a little bit and be cautious. And it's become a central item in the discussion around how do we make this not a tax question as to whether people take up environmental commitments. It's one that they should be able to consider on their business grounds, on their personal grounds, but shouldn't have their decisions driven by the tax system. And the Treasury came out in the consultation and said, we are quite minded to extend APR, agricultural property relief, so that farmland, if entered into a serious environmental commitment, would then qualify for full agricultural property relief. And we supported that change, did comment in considerable technical detail about issues they would need to think about. And today's announcement has come back saying that with effect from April 2025, so a year away, farmland that has been farmland for at least 2 years will be able to enter into an environmental commitment. It could be one that exists today or one that's entered into in the future. And it's with broadly government, wherever in the UK, with public bodies, with local authorities, and with what they call responsible bodies. And these are bodies recognised under the Environment Act 2021. That would then qualify for full agricultural property relief. That removes a significant area of doubt and of fear for many things that many owners and farmers might choose to do. So they can, for example, then move their land out of agricultural use under landscape recovery. It looks as though it should cover off-site biodiversity net gain agreements, whether with a local authority or where they involve a responsible body. Again, we wait to see the technical detail of all of this, but that is a significant advance. It's possibly not quite as comprehensive as we would have asked for, but it goes a very long way to answering many concerns. And then people can look at this just simply on its merits. Do they want to do it? Yes or no, and not be too worried about the tax side of this. It also helps tenants where landlord of a tenant might fear that the tenant going into a commitment like this could be embarrassing the landlord's tax position. And so the landlord is inclined to resist because the landlord doesn't want to pay tax like that. And this removes that particular shadow over that relationship and possible action. It's not a tax incentive to go into environmental commitments. It removes a tax disadvantage.
That moves us very neatly onto the announcement around the treatment of tenanted land for inheritance tax purposes. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, this spills out of the ROC review that reported to the government back in October 2022. And one of the many recommendations in that report around the let sector was a proposal that in order to encourage longer letting of land, a landlord's access to agricultural property relief, which is fully available for any letting granted since 1995, should be limited to land let for a term of at least 8 years. The government used this consultation to seek views on this. It said, we've heard this from Baroness Rock. It said, we've equally heard that other people think that there would be perverse and undesirable consequences. And so it was put out for consultation on a very neutral basis, that it needed to be talked about, but the government was open-minded as to what the answer was. It was a very brief part of the paper, so a lot of detail that would actually help people think through what it might mean, whether existing other protections for let land would also be in there or not, what exemptions there might be, and so on, is very much left for people to talk about rather than framing the kind of response. We took a view on the analysis of our land occupation surveys and other evidence, that this would be very damaging to the let sector, that it would not encourage anybody new to let who wasn't already letting, and it would discourage quite a lot of people who are now letting from letting or from letting as long as they do. That longer tenancies than 8 years would tend to come back to 8 years. Overall, we thought that as FBTs come round for renewal, they would then be let. They would then either be withdrawn or let for shorter terms in the main. Really, over 3 or 4 years, perhaps 500,000 acres lost from the let sector. And as the old Holdings Act tenancies, the 1986 Act tenancies, came to an end, we rather thought that they would see again a similar fall, overall the let sector dropping from a third to a fifth of our farmed area. And we could not see that that was possibly good news. The Treasury has now announced that it is not going to make that change. It's consulted, it's taken views, we have a decision, and the decision is to stay as we are, and that is very welcome. It avoids a lot of damage. I think it was only ever magical thinking to believe that this change could ever result in the longer tenancies that many people would indeed like to see. It was a counterproductive proposal. Other discussions are going on around the kind of framework that might encourage longer lettings. We have made proposals around that area, but this would simply have been damaging and it has been dropped by the government, and that is good news.
That's really good to hear. Looking at some of the other elements discussed, there was talk around renewable energy and nationally strategic infrastructure projects, or NSIPs. Was that good news or not?
Generally, this is good news. We spent the 2010s doing absolutely nothing about our energy problems. And a lot of work has been underway in the last year and a bit more around how on earth we're really going to provide the electricity, the power that we're going to need from renewable sources, from nuclear sources, to be net zero for 2050. We have to quadruple the amount of electricity we produce, and then we have to carry it all around the country. We've got to connect it all, and we wasted a number of years not doing anything about it, but the government is now working really rather hard, and the Labour Party is also looking to try to accelerate this were it in government. And some of that work has surfaced in the announcements today. Nothing, if you like, that it wasn't perhaps already known, but it, again, it's about accelerating. It is about getting good projects, much earlier connections than have been proposed. It's about getting the planning framework in better order to be able to handle these things. It's nudged the small modular nuclear reactor projects forward, both up and given Hitachi £160 million to help acquire the sites at both in Anglesey at Wolver and also at Oldbury-on-Severn down on the Gloucestershire coast. So a number of things moving. National Grid has been out with £40 billion worth of tenders. That's referred to in this paperwork. But other transmitters are also in that same area. SSEN in the north of Scotland is spending £5 billion on projects in this. Something that's been frozen is beginning to move. It's gathering pace. I'm waiting for a lot more announcements. For example, we're told that in June we will get some more guidance on what they're calling community benefits. So that is when National Grid comes by with its pylons carrying great volumes of electricity past you, you might get some benefit, or your village might get some benefit from having it. The most obvious part of the discussion has been around maybe £1,000 a year for 10 years off your electricity bills as part of accepting this national infrastructure coming past you. So lots being talked about, something's possibly beginning to happen.
On the planning permission front, there was also discussion around housing developments, nutrient mitigation, and some money for internal drainage boards. Is that going to push things forward?
It's all more delivery of where we are now. The Prime Minister in the question time immediately before this answered a Nottinghamshire MP pointing to the flood defence work that's been done in Nottinghamshire and the increased sums of money available for this. This particular announcement is for £75 million worth to internal drainage boards. So very much more focused on those particular areas around the Fens and elsewhere that have IDBs, but helping them manage water, manage flooding. Nutrient mitigation, this was expanded enormously last autumn as part of the political argument around then, the money that also came into slurry store grants and so on. And this is all again about helping development handle the problems around the nutrients from that are preventing well over 100,000 houses being built. And so this particular area of funding is looking at being able to assist 30,000 houses through the local nutrient mitigation fund. This is useful, but it's carrying forward existing policies rather than inventing new ones.
There was also some money for village halls and a Welsh campaign to boost the agri-food sector. Are these just frills or will they be genuinely helpful?
It's £5 million for each. That probably helps the Welsh Agri-Food Launchpad. I think I've still to discover quite what that is. But that is to £5 million will probably help that more significantly. £5 million into assisting village halls will probably disappear quite quickly, given the number of village halls and the scale of probable need. It's better than not having £5 million on that kind of subject.
Now, earlier you mentioned the commitment to establish a joint Treasury and HMRC working group to explore taxation of ecosystem services. How do you see this developing?
I think this, is, again, is very welcome. The Treasury in that consultation came out and said, look, we hear there are all sorts of tax fears, tax uncertainties about environmental transactions. If I enter into biodiversity net gain, I take a payment for 30 years, how is that taxed? What happens in different circumstances? How are carbon credits taxed and so on? And it was asking specifically around income tax and capital gains tax. There's been an outstanding matter on VAT, which was thought was going to be answered earlier, but hasn't been. And what the Treasury has done is actually exactly what we asked for, which is that, the, in my view, the real problem here is less actually about taxation than it is that people in this new area, these new emerging markets, people doing deals aren't yet really understanding what they're doing, the liabilities they're taking on, the risks and the opportunities, in essence, what they're being paid for, and the terms of that payment and what they have to do. And what is proposed is a working party where the Treasury sits down with the industry and professional advisors, and we look at common situations and we understand what's going on. And the more clearly we understand what's going on, the more then parties can know what they're doing, the more it'll be more obvious what are the accounting and tax treatments of those arrangements. Is a biodiversity net gain a capital transaction or an income tax transaction? Probably the latter in most cases, perhaps not always. And if we then identify tax problems that do need changes in the law, then we can answer them. And I think that's a more measured, satisfactory way of trying to tackle a new and possibly complex area. Some of it may be simpler than people think, but it can have its complexities. If we tackle it in a measured way, sharing the analysis between the industry, the advisors and government, we're likely to arrive at much better answers and probably cause less fear and uncertainty.
So there have been some really beneficial moves, but clearly we're heading for a general election later this year and the polls are not in favour of a Conservative government. So if another party gets into power, how likely are we to see these commitments remain in place?
I think probably the commitments around the reply to the consultation are very likely to stand. A working group analysing transactions is hardly likely to cause, I think, an incoming Labour government any particular qualms. With the announced extension of APR, probably legislated for in the finance bill this summer, and then on the statute book to apply from April next year, that then gives the environmental groups a positive interest in APR continuing. And the sums of money involved are very small. The Treasury calculations are that actually this may, rather as we suggested to the Treasury, cost them no money at all. And the reason is that if I have farmland and I keep it as farmland, then I continue to claim APR. If you don't extend APR, I will keep it as farmland. If you do extend APR, then I might take the farmland and put it into an environmental use. The tax outcome is the same. And the Treasury figures have clearly accepted that argument, that this doesn't give any significant tax increase. Maybe they're looking ahead half a dozen years, maybe £5 million. But that's all. You know, this is within any uncertainty of calculation. Obviously, the let land point might be revisited, but I think what you have got now is a considered and analysed answer within government that might be quite hard to shift. So I think if you're looking at what we've heard from a Labour government about what it might do, and I think they've really constrained themselves quite enormously, at least in terms of the words used in opposition. So not looking at rates of capital gains tax, not looking at income tax. You're looking at noises that are not about abolition of the reliefs from inheritance tax, but perhaps looking at more closely at their operation and whether they deliver at something more generous than really does the job. But it's very difficult to see the Labour Party wanting to remove business property relief. from small family-owned businesses, and that leaves agricultural property relief as a relief essentially on farmhouses and on let land, and now covering environmental uses. I think the weight of inertia probably counts against looking for very much change.
Thank you, Jeremy, for such a considered evaluation of these really complex issues. As ever, the farming and land management area requires long-term planning, and there's clearly a huge amount to come in the pipeline. CAV members can, of course, keep abreast of any changes and their practical implications by following the website, and the association will continue to work with any political parties in the years ahead to represent members' interests in this area. It's really good of you to join me, Jeremy, so thank you once again.
And there we are. We've reached the end of yet another episode of the CAAB podcast. If you want to keep up to date with all future episodes, or indeed catch up on previous ones, please head to our website, or you can subscribe for free on whatever platform you use. Also, if you have any feedback or ideas for future episodes, please get in touch by emailing us on enquire@caav.org.uk. That's it for today, so until the next time, thank you very much for listening, and bye for now.